Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. From a university in Brazil comes a major study about the therapeutic power of ginger against Alzheimer's disease. According to this scientific study, they stated, quote, Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia and is highly prevalent in old age. Unlike current drugs, medicinal plants can have preventative and protective effects with less side effects, end quote. Well, that's correct. And what they found was that the bioactive substances in plants, including the ginger family, have very strong medicinal potential and currently are widely studied regarding its anti-Alzheimer's disease impact. I suggest people grow good ginger. It grows very easily. It grows in different climates. It can grow 10, 12 foot high, gives a white, beautiful flower, and it's aromatic. But it's not the flower or the stem, it is the root, ginger root. And it can be 4 to 9, 10 inches. And you peel it down, dice it, and then use it in a stir fry or juice it. You get more power of the phytochemicals. And they're shown to be strongly anti-inflammatory. Yes, people will take ginger ale historically because it calmed an upset stomach. But we know that it also helps people who have sickness at sea, seasickness, and or even people who have some problems flying. An upset stomach is great, but turning off inflammation is far more important. And when you use ginger in addition to using curcumin together, you have a 1-2 at turning off pain anywhere in the body, turning off inflammation anywhere in the body, from your arteries and your liver, your kidneys, to your brain. So it's just good all the way around. In a few moments, we'll talk about the omega-3 fatty acids, specifically the DHA fraction of that, improving stroke therapy, Louisiana State University. But I also want you to know that today I'm going to be doing a commentary about my feelings concerning the riots that took place in Washington. In fact, all the rioting, not the peaceful demonstrations by the vast majority of people in throughout the country in the last year, but I'm talking about the rioters that broke into places, destroyed buildings, attacked people, killed people, burned down businesses. So I have my own thoughts on that, and a message for the incoming administration as well as the outgoing one. Also today, I'm going to take up the issue of people, including today Arthur Furstenberg, who says we've got the wrong pandemic. You could agree or disagree. I'm also going to take on the cancel culture. I think it is extremely deleterious. Summit News has good points on that. My guest in the second part of our program is Daphna Tackover, and she is an attorney. She is the director of the 5G Wireless Harms Project at Robert Kennedy's Children's Health Defense, and she's the founder of the advocacy organization We Are the Evidence, which is dedicated to protecting the rights of children and adults who have been injured by wireless electromagnetic radiation. And there's a lot going on with that. The case against the FCC health guidelines for 5G and wireless. The only thing you read about or hear about concerning 5G is how hip it is, quick it is, great it is, the internet of all things, and they don't tell you the downside. And there's a humongous downside. So we're going to tell you about that. She has filed 11,000 pages of scientific evidence against this FCC ruling to allow it. Now, that means also that this didn't come out of nowhere. This meant that Hillary and Bill Clinton supported it originally and made sure that no one could attack it or your community couldn't say, no, we don't want it. The law that was put into place because of Hillary and Bill Clinton and supported later by Barack Obama and Joe Biden allows you no rights, zero. They can put a tower anywhere they want, and you have no rights to say no. How'd that happen? This is the backstory of corruption at the highest level. We're going to explore that also. Also, I'm going to give you the latest on what's happening with our environment. From Common Dreams, quote, 1 year after declaring climate emergency, scientists say, quote, massive scale mobilization is necessary. Aggressive transformative change framed against the backdrop of social justice can ignite an enormous deployment that will let us avert the worst of the climate emergency, end quote. Who said this? 11,000 scientists from 153 countries came together to declare a climate emergency and urge ambitious action. The Oregon State University researchers who launched that effort said on Wednesday that an urgent massive-scale mobilization is necessary to address human-caused global warming. So, two things. First, I would like to ask you a simple question. No matter how bad it gets, do you believe we as a nation versus you as an individual or you as a small group have the motivation, desire to make the kind of changes that would be necessary to really make an impact in a positive way? I'd like you to think about that and then ask yourself, what have we done up to this point worldwide? What has China done? What has India done? What's the United States done? Since we are all driven by growth domestic product, meaning making more of everything, selling more of everything, and in the process using more of our natural resources and causing more carbon dioxide or methane emissions that create greater global warming. Have we done anything that is fundamental to changing this? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I will come back to that a little later. Also, I did not have a chance yesterday to share Dr. David Martin's views on Anthony Fauci, as well as the Gravitas clip where having a guest on who claims that she had absolute proof, not because she worked in the lab or was ever in the Wuhan lab, but because her MD, PhD mentor that she did work with on a daily basis explained to her how this could not have been a natural occurrence, the coronavirus, that it was manipulated and brought into that lab. Now, how it got out of that lab, we must assume at this point that it escaped through carelessness, but that it was created, she was not given a form. And she turned over all of her information to the FBI and others before she did any media. So why is it that when she was asked really hard questions, then now Facebook says, for interviewing her, you're being censored. And they took her off. We're going to play that clip because now Facebook is acting as if it's the on high oracle. They can determine what is true and not true, whether we take the red or blue pill. And that is a dangerous precedent to establish. That's our program today. So now we have the omega-3 fatty acids. You can get them from fish or you can get them from vegan sources as well. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Brain Circulation, and it provides strong evidence for adding the omega-3 fatty acids, and especially those strong in DHA, for the treatment of ischemic stroke. Researchers at Louisiana State University took a look at the addition of DHA and asked a basic question. Will this block the pro-inflammatory platelet-activating receptor that could better protect brain cells and improve post-stroke recovery than the administration of a single compound? And they found that it did. It worked. Quote, these findings provide a major conceptual advance of broad therapeutic relevance for cell survival, brain function, and particularly stroke and neurodegenerative diseases, end quote. Now, I've suggested that people who've had a stroke, ideally preventatively, in all nursing homes, assisted living centers, and even homes where you could afford it, get into a hyperbaric oxygen chamber. There are many, many positive effects for it, but especially post-stroke. It was interesting because there's a man named David, lives in Connecticut, and he had come to all of our workshops in early 1980s, and he had a stroke. because he wasn't following the program. In fact, I know he wasn't following the program. I had just finished a workshop on detoxification down on the Lower East Side, and I answer all the questions I can afterwards. About a half hour goes by, so I go outside, and as I'm walking across the street to the subway, there's David in front of one of those mystery meat, you know, outdoor vendors on the corner, wolfing down all this mystery meat. And I just walked on by him. What a person does is none of my business. And but 6 months later, he had a stroke. But in his pocket, he had a note, and he handed that to the doctor saying, I request getting into an hyperbaric oxygen chamber. So they called me, and they explained why. And I gave him the science on it. And they did, and it kept him from dying and kept more damage from occurring in the brain. So just remember that. Now add omega-3 fatty acids every day to that regimen. From the University of São Judas in Brazil comes a study about moderate, not heavy, moderate levels of physical fitness can now lengthen your telomeres. That's important because the longer your telomeres stay long, the longer you live. It's that simple. Quote, immunosenescence is an age-associated change characterized by a decreased immune response. Although physical activity has been described as fundamental for maintaining the quality of life, few studies have evaluated the effects of different levels of exercise on telomere length in aged populations. End quote. So they did this study, and they found out that moderate exercise, what we would, let's say, 4 days a week of going out for a fast, half-hour walk, that helps your CD4, CD counts go up, CD8, CD28, CD3, all improve. These are part of your immune T cells and also your telomeres. Lengthened, that's important. Live a longer life when you exercise. From Massachusetts General Hospital comes a large study. Long-standing study of diet, lifestyle, and health has found that adhering to specific guidelines, women can reduce more than one-third of the incidence of syndromes involving gastrointestinal and gastroesophageal reflux. That's a big deal. This is called the Nurses' Health Study. It's been going on for decades. And they don't adhere to a given protocol. Instead, they simply look at what they all had in common. So if over a period of 10 years, a person ate 7 servings of fruit and another group of nurses ate 3 servings of fruit, but the group that ate 7 servings had lower incidence of heart attacks, then they say, well, then eating more fruit will lessen your likelihood of heart attack. It's an important study, but it's not definitive, but it's certainly good. It's an indicator. This was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Internal Medicine. Now, the 5 factors that allowed a person to help prevent GERD were normal weight, never smoking, moderate to vigorous physical activity at least 30 minutes daily, restricting coffee, tea, and sodas, and a prudent diet. But their idea of a prudent diet is really the American diet, but just less of it. So I'm opposed to that. I'm radically opposed to that. That's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And it doesn't surprise me that an organization as complicit in misinformation as the Journal of the American Medical Association should know better. They're terrified, absolutely terrified of suggesting a healthy, clean, organic, plant-based diet. That's the diet that all of the science supports. Now, let me take their prudent diet and show you why it's a garbage diet and that you should never eat a prudent diet. You should never eat an average diet. You should never eat a standard diet. Eat a living foods diet. And yet here are the people who are the guardians of all truth on health who know nothing, in my opinion, about health. But at least it shows that if you have GERD, and what they should have known in this is that the one thing that they were right about, and this they were correct on, coffee and caffeinated tea, regurgitates back into the esophagus and causes a highly anabolic activity and hyperacidity in the stomach. That's where you get your acid reflux. So get rid of coffee, all caffeinated beverages, and see if that doesn't help. And also it'll help with fibrocystic breasts and fibroids. From Rockefeller University, a study of 50,000 people finds that brown fat may protect against numerous chronic diseases. What do I mean? Brown fat is that tissue that you may want more of. Unlike white fat, which stores calories, brown fat burns energy, and scientists hope it may hold the key to new obesity treatments. But it's been unclear whether people with ample brown fat truly enjoy better health. For one thing, it has been hard to even identify such individuals since brown fat is hidden deep inside the body. Now there's a new study published in Nature Medicine, offers strong evidence among 52,000 participants. Those who had detectable brown fat were less likely than their peers to suffer cardiac and metabolic conditions, ranging from type 2 diabetes to coronary artery disease, which is the leading cause of preventable death in the United States. And it's by far the largest of its kind. So that's good. They just had new technology to measure the amount of brown fat in the body. So, well, one way you're going to get more brown fat is just stay off the sugar, stay off all the excess calories, and exercise. That is one way we can have energy, more energy than what we otherwise have. Remember, the actual mechanisms by which brown fat may contribute to better health are still unclear, but there are some clues. For example, brown fat cells consume glucose in order to burn calories, and it's possible that this lowers blood glucose levels. And the role of brown fat is more mysterious in other conditions like hypertension, which is tightly connected to our hormonal system. Next up, we have a link between increased dietary fiber, that's good, and lower risk of depression. That's terrific because of our gut-brain interreactions. This is from the North American Menopause Society. So they found that fiber is a commonly recommended part of the diet. It's just we're not eating enough fiber. So when you give up meat that has no fiber, you're getting better fiber. If you're giving up the refined carbohydrates for the unrefined carbohydrates, give up white rice for brown rice. You know, give up your potato chips or French fries for whole potatoes. So we can get the fiber. That's not the problem. Getting our tastes adapted to high, rich fiber foods, that's a different issue. But fiber is very important for lessening colorectal cancer, helping with digestion, creating good prebiotics. And on the other hand, depression is common, and it's a serious issue that affects a lot of people, especially now because of COVID. It's estimated that 264 million people worldwide have depression, and that's increasing. And it can be debilitating. You can be a functional depressive person where you're just not happy, and you always have a sense of foreboding and unease. And because of the serious consequences and prevalence of depression, numerous studies have been undertaken to evaluate the best options. Well, unfortunately, most people rely upon some form of chemical and antidepressant medication, which, look at the side effects. Just open up the package insert, and right up there on the side effects at the top is depression is a side effect of the depression medication. Just like the side effects of AZT was AIDS. Well, how would you know you had AIDS from a virus versus AIDS from being treated for that? Because you had a lot of asymptomatic people who had HIV but were otherwise healthy until they started taking AZT, and then, boy, just hundreds of thousands went down the tube quickly. Unfortunately, Anthony Fauci didn't seem to get ahead of that curve, and a lot of people died needlessly from autotoxemia from the drugs. So that's what happens with antipsychotic medication and antidepressant medication. So just fiber improves the richness and diversity of your gut microbiota, the good bacteria in your gut. So the more good bacteria you have from clean, healthy food in your diet, the less depression. That's the takeaway message. It's that simple. We are out of time for health and nutrition. We are 20 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I have a commentary to share with you. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. We'd also like to start the new year by letting you know that we have a rather interesting audience, an audience that appreciates social activism, demonstrations. We have led hundreds of demonstrations against what we considered injustices to the human population, animals, or the environment. And I want to thank you, all of the thousands who showed up, including the 8,000 in this audience who showed up in Prospect Park and walked for 10 days to Washington, D.C., where we met in front of the Capitol in Lafayette Park to protest and nuclear radiation. And also, we were protesting genetically modified foods. We wrote articles, produced documentaries, held town hall meetings, focus groups, and we educated the public about staying organic and local instead of genetically modified. So when I saw the protest, I was appalled. The storming the U.S. Capitol was an act of cowardly anarchy that should not be tolerated, supported, and certainly never apologized for. This is not how constructive change is undertaken, and there is a long history of violent revolutions and coups to prove this is the case. There are other peaceful ways for rational people to bring about constructive change by putting pressure on the careers of legislators, or even to win their hearts. Articles and opinion pieces, community roundtable discussions, well-organized peaceful protests, citizens' campaigns to elect people, documentaries. You have to believe that there are people who will listen to you if enough of you share your voice and concerns, irrespective of race, class, status, gender, ethnicity, or some among the many tactics to bring about a reversal to destructive policies and laws. Each of us also has the responsibility to firmly scrutinize every candidate for office and determine where he or she stands on progressive issues that will benefit every American as well as other populations throughout the world. When I asked my brother, who has been helping small businesses as a volunteer for 45 years, thousands of small businesses, and almost every single thing he offered to help the small businesses with landlords was rebuked. And as a result, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of businesses and their employees have lost their jobs over the last 30 years. The landlords control every aspect of the city council, the mayor's office, the head of the city council. No matter what they tell you, they control. You go to landlord-tenant court, it's a joke. Everything about this is a joke because they laugh at you, and we, the small business people, are paying their property taxes. You don't find that in other places, but in New York, you find it. So I know that you have to have enough people in a given place on a given issue with the truth on your side, present it diplomatically but with passion so they understand. So whether it's a city council or a state representative or a governor, a mayor, or a member to the Senate or House or the White House, I believe all these people should be held to the same standard. So I'm going to give you a simple litmus test. Here are the standards that we progressives in the United States who do not adhere to or believe in any ideology or political party, but rather in the truth. Whatever the truth is, that's what we're focused on. Here's what we believe should be front and center and would make a huge difference to the citizens of this country as well as around the world. And over the years, I have talked about this as a part of a progressive agenda. I've yet to see a single president, a single state legislator, take this on, and certainly no members of the city council. One, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act to again separate savings and loans and banking from the speculative investment bankers. Ban trading in commodities that are necessary to life, such as food and water, and oppose the privatization of that water. Stop the Federal Reserve from giving any more money, no interest loans, to banks and corporations. If they have been foolish enough not to be successful, if they've been greedy, if they've been mismanaged, then like small businesses and homeowners, let them file for bankruptcy, let their corporation dissolve, let the shareholders take the beating for being stupid and greedy enough to invest in a company without paying attention to the merits of what they produce, their product or service, or how they're managed. Forgive all student loan late fees and cap all interest rates at 1%. And allow all students who are delinquent on loans to file bankruptcy. Repeal and reverse Bush's bankruptcy law revisions on this very topic. It was under Bush and supported by Democrats that you couldn't file for bankruptcy if you were a student. As a result, we have debt peonage in probably 70% of all students. Create a national food program to see that the 25 million hungry children in the United States are fed quality food, not institutional food, quality food every day for free. De-ghettoize America's program of food distribution, bypassing corporations and working directly with communities. Start a massive Marshall Program to decentralize the major mega corporations like Monsanto or DuPont, Syngenta, and instead help establish local food community growing programs, indoor and outdoor, food harvesting for local consumption. Create a program of reforestation, a Marshall Plan to rebuild our forests to fight climate change, with the goal of planting 1 trillion trees. Protect public lands from private interest. There should be a moratorium on all of our oceans, the Gulf of Mexico, Alaska, all of our national forests. No more of any form of exploitation from fossil fuels, mining, or lumber. And yet Obama, Bill Clinton, and Biden and Al Gore all participated in opening up these natural resources for exploitation. And look at the consequences. Look at the Gulf of Mexico. And now look at what's happening to Alaska. We should also have a Marshall Plan for employing skilled and unskilled labor to improve our infrastructure. Let's put millions of Americans to work at a living wage locally and not under management from the big insider corporations, the private-public partnerships that are pure greed and always corrupt. Let us use local talent to build bridges, highways, levees, water utilities, waterways, gas mains, refurbish these throughout the country. Let us support senior citizens with free community hospice, hospital care, and food co-ops so that no senior citizen has to worry about not getting the medication or the medical care they need that is not covered under Medicaid or Medicare, and also that they should have food cooperatives where every day, 7 days a week, they can go to a place and pick up fresh, healthy food for their survival at no cost. Let us close and decommission every nuclear power plant and shift investment in support of geothermal, solar, and wind power, energy power also. Ban all private funding for any election so that you could go to prison if you took a dollar from any lobbyist, PAC group, take every single nickel out of every election, and you would never again see incumbents having a free ride back in. Here's the irony. The popularity of and trust in Congress is about 9%. The media is actually less, and yet 93% of all incumbents get reelected because half the time they're in Congress, they're raising money from special interest groups, and then you wonder why we have mandatory laws or why we have a package that was just 5,000 pages that no one read, and money was given to Egypt, over $1 billion. We shouldn't give a penny to Egypt. They're so engaged in massive human rights violations. In fact, most of the countries are. But we wouldn't give any of the money to these projects I just mentioned. So take the money out of all elections and let the average person have a chance to run. I would say that you challenge the AstroTurf groups like ALEC with stronger laws so they cannot influence state legislatures. We should have a law that if any state legislator meets once or twice a year, as they have for almost 45 years, with members of the American Legislative Exchange Council. This is a consortium of about 250 corporations that want their laws passed. So bills are written up by the lobbyist lawyers, taken to these conferences, and across the table, the legislator is handed this bill by the lobbyist that says, now go make this a law. So when you have mandatory vaccine laws, that's how it works. All right, that's just one example. When you have in Pennsylvania such a fetid, corrupt state in its body politic, when you have that a doctor cannot inform anyone that a patient they're treating had a direct exposure to a gas hydrofracking chemical and therefore causing illness, so you're censoring medicine for the benefit of the gas hydrofrackers. This is done everywhere, every day, every second, every day, and it's all corrupt. So make it a law. You meet with a legislator, you've committed a crime, you lose your job, and you go to prison. Campaign finance reform and return to manual balloting. No more computer balloting. The cessation of gerrymandering. Voting districts to determine by independent nonpartisan review based upon the specific needs of a population and regions. Start demilitarization of all of our forces around the world. Bring them all back. Reduction in the Pentagon defense budget by 80%. Conduct an investigation into the influence of agricultural corporations like Monsanto on American foreign policy. Mandatory GMO labeling and conduct independent research to determine GMO's claims of safety. If they did that, if they actually did that, Obama actually gave them more power under an act that protects GMOs so they didn't have to tell what was in the product, then every product that's GMO'd would be removed from the market. Cease all gas hydrofracking and offshore drilling. Audit the Federal Reserve, then close it down. Audit the Defense Department and reduce it by 80%. Eliminate Homeland Security, eliminate the CIA, reduce all their budgets to what is actually necessary to protect America. Allow all corporations that cannot be maintained to go through structured bankruptcy instead of a bailout. No more bailouts. Ban lobbying from all state and federal offices. Revoke Citizens United. Universal health care under Medicare that includes some alternative medical therapies, as in some other European nations, as well as a preventative health program. Create a national health prevention program so we don't get sick to begin with. Open up a halfway houses and halfway beautiful environment for returning veterans to help them with their post-traumatic stress disorder and their exposure to toxins in the battlefield. Acknowledge the dangers of depleted uranium in all conflict zones and go back to those countries and remove depleted uranium and treat the people there who have been poisoned. Strengthen laws against hate crimes targeting minorities, immigrants, and LGBT persons. Reform our prison system. If a person's not guilty of a violent crime, then don't lock them up. Let them work off a sentence, a reasonable sentence in community service, and then expunge their records so they don't carry that throughout their life and limit them. And also change the entire prison system and stop all private private prisons and stop exploiting them to corporate labor. If you're going to have a prisoner work and making a Nike shoe or whatever they might do, pay them a normal wage. The national program to have potential law enforcement officers undergo a psychological screening is a must. Defund and eliminate 90% of all SWAT teams and only have people who are from a neighborhood police a neighborhood without all the armor, where they can go each day and walk the beat and talk with the people to see what do the people in that neighborhood need to feel safe and secure. And they know they're communicating with someone from the neighborhood, and so there is no profiling, and there's not going to be the same notion of crime. When I interviewed Ralph Nader, on multiple occasions, Dennis Kucinich, Rocky Anderson, Jill Stein, Marianne Williamson, and some others. None of these progressive leaders perform well in elections. Why? They were on the right side of every one of these changes. They said yes to everything I just mentioned, and they meant it. It was because the vast majority of Americans are uninterested in electing people who will wholeheartedly serve their needs and to preserve the environment and human rights and human nature and are more holistic and spiritual. Rather, they prefer leaders who have atrocious records in legislating radical positive changes on any of these issues. They've done nothing with any of the issues I just mentioned. Nothing. Not one. Not Obama, not Clinton, not George Bush Jr. or Sr., not Ronald Reagan, not one. So what does that tell you? But they all have wonderful personalities, at least except for Trump. Consequently, this past year has been one of massive protests. Millions of people demonstrated against the unjustified police murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and 168 other black citizens during the first 8 months of last year alone. We support these demonstrations because they force those in power to realize they have failed to use their power and influence wisely in order to curtail the injustices now destroying our society. Who teaches the police? Well, sure as hell, it's not going to be good if the Israelis, who do teach our police and teach them as if the person that they're going after is what they would do with a Palestinian. Sorry to say that, but it's the truth that we will never hear in any of the other media. So why would we allow people to be taught the wrong way of dealing with a conflict to de-escalate it? And yet we have absolutely looked at all policing from the wrong perspective. Rather, our politicians repeatedly use their authority to benefit the rich, the hyper-rich, and the uber-rich. From the Reagan administration to the present, our presidents and congressional leaders have accomplished nothing, zero, to secure our rights and freedoms or improve the quality of life on this planet. Instead, their decisions have only increased pain, poverty, and suffering on a global genocidal scale. Inequality and injustice is inherent in the neoliberal agenda that they espouse and praise. After the French diplomat, Alex Tocqueville, made a trip to the United States, he wrote that he had never visited another country where there was, quote, less independence of mind and true freedom of discussion than in America, end quote. He would make the same statement today. He pointed blame on the immense power of the American elite, who are supported by the majority of the population. The consequence, Tocqueville argued, is the faculty of critical thinking is a rarity in American culture. Tocqueville also prophetically observed that the United States' view of democracy would create a new form of tyranny based upon an obscene addiction to materialistic and hedonic pursuits that have given rise to a privileged elite and a culture of selfishness and that has come to define the nation's population. So we should all support peaceful protest and abhor and denounce violence in any form, whether by crazed Trump supporters or the woke youth destroying storefronts, and as well as the murders and beatings of law enforcement or innocent civilians. It is all wrong. And yet we have made one wrong and the other right. And that is itself wrong. Americans fail to examine carefully the underlying causes of the majority's concerns. It requires a much broader view. Our society is now far more complex and demographically diverse than at any time in our history, and yet we continue to embrace a mindset that would be more appropriate at the time of the American Revolution. Our nation is historically illiterate. I doubt that many of the rioters who scaled the Capitol building would be capable of passing the USCIS examination for U.S. citizenship or a civics test. The question remains whether we have the will, understanding, and strength of nerve to take ourselves to task and stare deeply into the delusions about the nation as a whole and our emotional dependency to keep these delusions alive. Can we observe and acknowledge that we have and continue to be commodified, commercialized, and even weaponized in order to sustain warring divisions between race and class, inane political ideology, and regressive religious beliefs across the nation. All of this is orchestrated within the very fabric of a democracy carrying no more substance than a dream to prevent any kind of unification of moral rectitude and virtue across dividing lines to emerge. More important than even gathering in streets and parks to protest injustice, despite its value, is a far more urgent need for a radical change in consciousness. More than ever before, we are at a threshold where people need to adopt a practice of deep introspection into their mental beliefs and emotions, and then realize how much they have been fabricated into believing and built upon the delusions that have been spoon-fed to us through the most compromised, captured, and corrupt media we have ever had in American history. And as a result, our own personal lives are compromised. And the corporate propaganda, also spewed by our national leaders, left and right, are the only ones who benefit from keeping the charade alive. Those are my thoughts. We're going to take a break and come back. And when we come back, we will go to our guest who is standing by. Please stay with us. Now we're going to my guest who's standing by. I gave you her bio a little earlier in the program. Daphne, is it Tackover? Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Well, it's nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary.
So using the SEC's baseline, what does the actual evidence you have submitted indicate? The 11,000 pages worth of evidence that raises the alarms of wireless and 5G's high risks. And second, what evidence is there that the FCC's guidelines are based on faulty and erroneous science deployed by the telecommunications industry itself rather than independent science? The forum is yours.
Thank you, Gary. In terms of your question about the case, so yes, the Children's Health Defense submitted a lawsuit in February 2020 against the Federal Communication Commission, which is in the United States the agency that's responsible to regulate 5G and basically wireless technology health effects. Unfortunately, the FCC is not a health agency. The FCC is a spectrum auctioning agency. And it's been using it to kind of like play a game, say, well, you know, we're not health agency, we're relying on health agencies, and then the health agency tell us there's no evidence, but none of the health agencies in the United States actually properly learning this topic. So in December 2019, the FCC basically decided that the guidelines that they adopted in 1996 are basically valid and nothing has changed and there's no evidence of harm. Unfortunately, there is massive evidence of harm, and the FCC is absolutely made aware of it. Since the FCC asked the public in 2013 whether or not the FCC should change their guidelines, thousands of comments were submitted to the FCC docket, including thousands of scientific studies, numerous testimony from scientists, hundreds of testimonies of people who have been injured, including parents of children who have been injured by this technology and severely injured. The FCC in December 2019 basically published a decision saying, well, there's no evidence, and disregarded all the evidence, did not even address the evidence. That gave us 60 days to sue the FCC, or we would have lost that chance. We actually been waiting for 20 years to sue the FCC for this guideline. It's very, very difficult to file cases against the FCC, and this is why it's a landmark case. And we filed a case, and amongst our petitioners, there's Professor David Carpenter from New York. He's from professor at Albany, New York, at Albany University in New York, and he also the author of the Bioinitiative Report, which is the most elaborated review of the science on wireless technology health effects. It's a group of 29 scientists, leading scientists and public health experts in the topic of electromagnetic fields and radiation, who reviewed thousands of studies, and their conclusion was that the evidence is clear and conclusive that wireless causes harms. And actually concluded that it can cause harm from minutes of exposure. So there are thousands of studies showing the harm thousands of studies that the FCC completely ignored when they made a decision that there's no evidence. And this is why we are suing the government. In fact, there's also a lot of the studies we are relying on, actually studies that were done and conducted by the U.S. government. Most recently, the National Toxicology Program study was released. This is a $30 million study that was conducted by the federal agency, the National Toxicology Program, which is our expert agencies when it comes to evaluating toxin. And they conducted a 10-year study. It was designed perfectly to be a bulletproof study. And their conclusion was they found clear evidence that this radiation causes cancer and breaks the DNA. And they called to warn the public. Not only the FCC and our government did not warn the public, they actually tried to minimize the results and dismiss them completely, claiming that they are not applicable to humans without any evidence to substantiate what they said. In fact, they completely followed EPA and FDA guidelines as to how to conduct studies to make sure that they're applicable to humans. So this is, some of the evidence we have, but I think most important is the human evidence. And there's, we do science in order to warn the public as to what may happen to humans. Unfortunately, we did not listen to science. We tried to misrepresent what science says in the past 50 years since we started to use wireless technology. But those thousands of studies, everything they warn us actually is happening. I think the most common and widespread manifestation of wireless harms is what's known as microwave sickness or electrosensitivity. It's when people develop various neurological symptoms when they are using their wireless devices or exposed to this radiation, such as, for most people, it starts with tingling in the hand, pain in the head, heart palpitation, cognitive problem, memory problem, sleep disturbances, et cetera, et cetera. And those symptoms are becoming more and more widespread, and the evidence, including the evidence that was filed into the docket of the FCC, suggests that somewhere between 10 to 30% of people are already developing those symptoms. And again, all of this information is being suppressed. Doctors are not being informed. But doctors who are aware of this evidence reporting that probably 30% of people who come to the clinic suffering from this condition, whether or not they know. I actually had a very interesting conversation with a professor at NYU, MD, PhD, and he told me, we had a two-hour conversation. In the end of the conversation, he said, Daphna, this is mind-blowing. Now I understand, after talking to you for 2 hours and understanding the evidence, I now understand what I've been seeing in my clinic for the past 10 years, and I couldn't understand where all of this sickness is coming from. Nothing makes sense, but now it does. So the evidence in regard to wireless technology is conclusive. The harms are conclusive. This radiation interferes with numerous systems and organs, brain injury, literally brain injury, although there was no physical injury allegedly to the brain. It interferes with our vascular system, interferes with our immune system, interferes with our nervous system, interferes with reproductive harm in the reproductive system. So the evidence is conclusive to each of these items, and unlike what the public is being told, even the majority of studies showing that this radiation is very harmful. So the evidence is conclusive, and this is the evidence we filed in our case, which is about 11,000 pages of evidence, and this is literally only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the evidence that actually exists.
Good. Okay. Well, I appreciate that overview. Some countries have now placed a moratorium on 5G installations, notably Switzerland. Efforts are underway in other countries, such as Italy, to do the same. What can we learn from those countries that have been successful in getting their governments to take a hard look at the scientific data? And what rights do the people within cities here or neighborhoods even have if they choose not to have a 5G installation? Do they have any rights? Or if they don't, what happened at the beginning of this where lobbyists or whoever was in power solidified or codified into law that the carriers, the communications companies, would have the power to decide where something went, not the local community?
Well, the theory that there's a lot of misinformation when it comes to, you know, what's going on around the world. Switzerland did not ban 5G. Switzerland did a study, and actually they said that they don't see any health effects, although we don't necessarily have enough information specifically on 5G technology. They gave more power to the local municipality to decide on various issues, but they did not ban 5G. There are very small countries that have, but I think that in most of the countries to which we're looking looking for guidance, actually, you know, government continue full force when it's come to 5G deployment. Actually, you're right about Italy. There've been massive effort in Italy. 500 mayors signed a letter or petition that they're calling to put a moratorium on 5G. And actually, France now, the activism in France are making huge progress. There was a letter of 1,000 employees of Orange, which is one of the biggest cell phone companies in the world, calling to put a moratorium on 5G. The Green Party in France was gained a lot of power in the last municipal elections in France, and they also have a very strong position against 5G, and 70 mayors just signed a letter of petition again calling for a moratorium on 5G based on both health effects and environmental impact. I mean, the impact of this technology is monstrous. I mean, a lot of the issues, you know, a lot of the problem we attribute to climate change actually can be explained by exposure to this radiation. And there are a lot of reports, including government reports, saying it. There is a letter from the Department of Interior in the U.S. government saying that the reason we have problem with migrations of birds is because of the cell towers and radiation. And they also said that the FCC guidelines are 30 years obsolete, which they are. In terms of communities in the U.S., you know, unfortunately, the telecommunication industry has been very successful in its lobbying efforts. And, you know,
Daphne, could you just hold one second? Because we have to say goodbye to our WBAI audience. We're continuing on PRN.FM to the top of the hour. Please continue.
You know, I've been doing a lot of effort awakening communities around the country. Essentially, what happened in the U.S., the telecommunication companies were able to get the federal government to pass legislation and regulation that took almost all the power from the states and from the municipal authorities to regulate anything when it comes to wireless technology. People are banned from objecting this technology in the U.S. based on health effects, which is just kind of like mind-blowing, but that was done already in 1996 by the Bill Clinton administration. And when it came to 5G, the FCC passed a lot of regulation that took municipal power to regulate locations of cell towers, not only based on health effects, but essentially based on all other reasons. However, we have been encouraging municipalities around the country to continue and put a lot of pressure on their municipalities, because there's still quite a lot the municipalities can do. But the municipality will have to be courageous to do it, because they have been threatened, literally threatened by the telecommunication companies, that if they pass those ordinances that will be more protective, they'll be sued. And as we all know, the telecommunication companies have very deep pockets, and they're not afraid to sue. You know, this is just small change for them, while for a municipality to be sued, it can get the municipality to be bankrupt. So municipalities are afraid, and although there are quite a lot of things they still can do to protect their residents, they don't do it because they're afraid of those lawsuits. So we've been working with a lot of communities around the country. We wrote really good ordinances that help the municipalities to bypass all of those regulation by the FCC. But again, it's been a very uphill battle. And usually the only municipalities that are successful are municipalities where the residents hire an attorney to help them fight the municipality to adopt more protective ordinances. However, the good news is that those efforts may be not always fruitful in terms of getting ordinances, good ordinances passed to protect the residents. This pushback by the residents actually did have quite a lot of impact on the telecommunication industry. And I saw a report about a month ago where they say so, basically, that they did not expect so much resistance. So our grassroots efforts were successful. But also in terms of technology, I do think that they're going to deploy now less of the small cells that they plan to deploy for the 5G infrastructure. And there are different reasons for that, including the grassroots movement. So what we suggest to people to do is to continue and educate their communities. The more people will know the actual evidence about how harmful this technology is, especially 5G, because it's, you know, they're putting those cell towers literally 3 feet from people's homes, and the levels of radiation that emitted by these devices are exponentially higher, and the modulations are much more complex and harmful. So we need to educate. The more people educated, the better chances we have to create change, and we desperately need change because so many people are sick from this technology. Many don't even know that that's the cause to their sickness.
Daphna, I just have one last question. If you could answer within 2 minutes, please. The mainstream media now is completely on board with the 5G rollout, as the pandemic has completely captured the attention of the media and the average citizens behind the curtain. 5G installations have risen exponentially, and we're now seeing a flurry of advertisements on television and cable programs touting the new era of 5G with all of its promises of improvement of our lives, electronically improving our lives. So it's a simple conclusion for the average person. Yeah, they're on board. Yet they're censoring everywhere they can any voice that opposes 5G, and especially the New York Times, which is one of the co-sponsors of the 5G. Could you address the media complicity in having the resources, the highly educated, very intelligent reporters and journalists who have chosen not to look at the work you and others have done, instead pure 5G only?
Conspiracy. Well, it's not surprising at all. I mean, people are not aware that basically almost all of our what we call mainstream media is owned by telecommunication companies that are installing these technologies. AT&T owns Time Warner, which owns CNN. Verizon owns AOL and Yahoo. Comcast owned to NBC. New York Times is owned by Carlos Slim, which is one of the richest people in the world and a telecommunication expert. The Atlantic is owned by Steve Jobs' widow, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the telecommunication industry owns the media. There's no chance you're going to hear the truth from in this media. There was an article in the New York Times basically saying, the title, if I remember correctly, was your cell phone would not harm you, but Russia wants you to believe that it does, which is kind of like shameful. So I'm trying to put, you know, Russia into this. Actually, that article by the New York Times was fined to violate rules of ethics of journalism by the Irish Ombudsman for Truth in Journalism. So our media is literally shameful, and you cannot, unfortunately, read the truth in the media. The campaign against 5G in social media is probably the biggest censorship of any issue at any time in history. We are completely blocked when actually all the information we are putting out there is truthful, it's factual. There's no one article you can show that CHD, Children's Health Defense, puts in social media while I'm working for CHD that has any misinformation or false fact. Nevertheless, we are being censored. And for that reason, the Children's Health Defense also filed a case against Facebook for censorship. So we're living in very weird times, very disturbing times, where, you know, lies become truth and truth becomes conspiracy theory. And, you know, we all need to come together and work hard to you know, create change, as you said before in your comments before our talk.
I agree. And I just want you to know, and Robert Kennedy to know, Mary Holland know, that we have an enormous amount of respect for the work, the courage of the Children's Health Defense to take on these issues. They're unpopular. Robert has been smeared, his character defamed, he's been pillared on Facebook and also on Wikipedia. But we, we who've been activists for a long time continue to share information. So, A, I support what you're doing and the good work of this on 5G. Please tell very quickly, how can people in this audience join your cause? Can you give us what they can do very quickly to join in and help?
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, one of the things we did in order to address the problem with the media, in addition to suing Facebook, we also decided to have our own media platform, which is called The Defender. And every news item in that media outlet is being fact-checked, not by Facebook fact-checker, by serious attorneys and doctors and professionals that work with us. So you can go and register to The Defender, and so you can get our news and help spread the truth. You also hopefully can donate. I mean, the case against the FCC has cost us many, many hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we definitely need a donation because we also want to bring other lawsuits and cases, and we need money for that. So we would appreciate people donating to our cause. So if you can go to the childrenshealthdefense.org and just make a donation, and that would be very much appreciated. There's a lot of good information. I think people should join efforts in their communities. There are numerous communities around the country who are fighting in it. And if you don't have a community where you live, that just initiate effort to start educate your communities. I will always be available to help those communities, to give lecture, to educate, to speak to legislators. But we need people on the ground to join the movement and start the process in their communities, and we will do the best we can to help.
Thank you very much for being with us today and for the good work you're doing. Daphna Tachover, T-A-C-H-O-V-E-R. I'm Gary Nall. We try to bring you a lot of ideas. Some we agree upon, some we disagree upon. That's the respect of freedom of speech that I have. And we will continue to have an open forum. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.